Hello and welcome to our Student Support Podcast. Here we speak to tutors, experts and students from around the world. They'll be sharing their advice and experience to help you on your ACCA journey and achieve your exam goals.
Welcome to this ACCA podcast. I'm Paul Kirkwood and today we're meeting with Stuart Pedley-Smith, Capplan's Head of Learning and Expert Tutor. Our focus today is helping students who've suffered an exam setback get back on track. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Paul. Good to be here.
Likewise. And to get started, can you tell me a little bit about your role at Capplan, please?
I'm Capplan's Head of Learning, which effectively means that I'm responsible for our learning strategy and certain aspects as to how we teach, the pedagogy that we use. And I work very closely with our product teams in how we design courses.
Okay, let's turn our attention to the focus of today's podcast, which is really thinking about how we can help our students get back on track after they suffer an exam setback. And we know that many of our students do suffer exam setbacks during their journey to qualification. And when you speak to students in this position, what's the first thing that you maybe tell them or ask them or discuss?
Yeah, it's a good question, Paul. I think the first thing is to reassure students that they will face a failure at some point. Either they have already, or if this is the first time, that they're certainly not the first person to have failed an exam or faced a particular setback. In fact, it's very often how you cope with that setback that gives you kind of quite an important life skill. So first thing I think is you're not on your own. It's kind of quite a normal thing. And obviously professional exams are particularly difficult. The second part, and I think this is the more difficult bit, once you've accepted there's nothing wrong with failing, the second part I think is more difficult, which is going back over something you've studied before and keeping it fresh. How do you pick up a text or work through a question or something, or you know, go to a chapter and say, well, actually, I've read this once. Oh, gosh, I think I know it, but obviously I don't because I didn't get through that particular part. And it's that maintaining that energy and momentum. I think that's much more difficult. And I think you have to work at that.
And do you think there's any advice you would give on maybe how to start that process? You know, speaking to you, having the chat, yeah, that makes sense. How do I start that process?
It's a bit about personality to a certain extent. Some people are quite analytical. So the first part of the process is to analyse and, you know, get as much feedback as you can from ACCA and find out, you know, which bits didn't I get right. And then it gives you some focus and direction as to what to start with. If you've got no focus, then I'd probably start looking at the sort of the broader syllabus areas and start working backwards from that, saying, look, you know, 30% of the questions I'm going to face are going to be around this particular topic. How confident am I at approaching that? And then I'd sort of start almost like on a risk approach, you know, leaving the stuff that's smaller or less likely to feature in the exams or less important until the end. Then if you do start to run out of a bit of energy, you're running out on energy on something that's a little bit less important.
And actually, you know, if you can create that process that works for you, then you would then be able to use that, you know, if you come across another failure in the future and maybe refine it and get better. So it's not something you'd use once, it's something you could use again.
Yeah. And I think it is just that idea that it's okay, but then picking up the direction and place where you put your efforts. I think that's the tricky bit.
Okay, now I know that you recently ran a webinar on helping students get back on track to success because I listened in. Could you just briefly explain the key elements that you ran through that could help students in this time?
Yeah, I didn't go for the easy stuff, Paul. I went for the big stuff, really. The sort of the underlying elephants in the room, I suppose, if you like, as to what sits underneath the things that you need to get right in order to get you back on track. And the first one was motivation. And the motivation is important because this is the bit that gets you going in the first place. It's that movement. So motivation, then when you're moving, how do you make sure that what you're doing is as effective as possible? And that's concentration. And then the third part of it was, I suppose, more about this idea of what's going on. So you're concentrating, but are you not as effective because you're kind of filling your head with self-doubt And that part of it was really about confidence in yourself and the process that you're going, or that you're, the process that you're working with in order to move you through the content and materials and to the exam.
So I really like that idea of those three things, the motivation, the concentration, the confidence. Can we just spend a little bit of time digging in to each of them in a little bit of detail just to see whether we can pick up some key themes or tips or ideas that we can share with the students? So maybe starting with motivation, how do you think students can, you know, get that motivation, get that mojo, or increase their current motivation level?
Yeah. And look, this isn't just exams, is it? This is all aspects of life. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Well, I'd like to say we're in the middle. I'm not quite sure. We might be at the start. So we're in the middle of a pandemic, and being motivated is very easy to lose sight. And yet some people will maintain their motivation. So what I tried to do, Paul, was to break it down into some of the things that are the components of motivation. So the first one was being clear in your objective, and that has such a simple tone to it. You know, yeah, well, all right, objective, make it smart, all that sort of stuff that people know. But in many ways, that's not key to it. It's important. And I ran through a number of sort of different ways and a process you could use, but there's two probably that sit in there quite important. And the first one is, when you are motivating yourself, although there has an emotional context to it, motivating yourself towards something, not away from something, i.e. what do you want, not what you don't want, is easier. And secondly, the question to ask is the activity that you want to do, because motivation is an action, is it in your control? You know, losing weight, passing an exam, which of those is in your control? And for an exam, unless you're marking your own script, it isn't in your control. But working efficiently through the materials, practicing as many questions as you can, maintaining your concentration, those are all things that you can do. So you want to be motivated towards things that are important to you. So that was the big first one, I suppose.
And focusing on those positive aspects.
Yes, and the positives in the context of that you don't define the motivation as a negative. I don't want to fail.
I see. That makes sense.
Because positive has so many connotations. Absolutely. Paul, isn't it? You know, like, oh, I'm feeling positive. My mood is positive. But this is in things that you are going to do rather than things not doing. It's very difficult to not focus on something. So if you say, don't think about this, don't think of a purple tree, the brain struggles with it a little bit.
Okay, now the purple tree is now in my mind. Thank you very much for that. You also mentioned a streaks concept, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of the others, I mentioned, you know, carrots and sticks. Environment is a biggie. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of research and evidence about changing environments and how people behave in them. But I like this one because of all of them, it's got a new shininess to it. It's off the back of some work by a guy called Seth Godin, and he talks about streaks in the context of being a game. Once again, there's a lot of stuff at Kaplan. We run a gamification program, so we spend quite a bit of time looking at the principles behind gaming. And this is a good example of a simple type of gamification. So it turns an activity into a game. And the process is, he argues that a streak requires a commitment. So the first thing is you give a commitment to it and you say, right, I am going to touch my toes every morning as soon as I get out of bed. So that's a commitment. And then it turns into practice. So, right, I've got to get out of bed. I've got to practice this now because I've got to touch my toes. And then the secret to it is that the practice, and this is a neurological process. So the process is moving from what starts out as a bit of fun. It then moves into repetition, and then repetition moves into habit. And it's using some of the things that you might do for things that are bad habits. Mm-hmm. It's using the context of habit, because habit is an unconscious process. So what it does is it takes the repetition and turns it into a habit. And once it's a habit, you'll get out of bed, touch your toes, go and make a cup of tea, and somebody will say, what have you done this morning? And you'll say, I've made a cup of tea. So, well, didn't you touch your toes? Oh, I don't know. I think so.
Because you've done it anyway.
Yeah. So it'd be great for learning, wouldn't it? You know?
Fantastic.
What, 20 questions and I didn't notice.
Well, and there's the example, you know, whether it's five or T's or whether it's a read in three pages or reviewing your notes, just whatever the streak would be that works for you, the simple yeah. activity.
And I think that the important thing is that people don't break streaks. Mm-hmm. They feel bad.
Okay, so following your webinar, I actually went in and looked at some of the questions that were being asked by the students. And so actually, I've picked a couple which I think are just really interesting in these areas. So one student asked, how would you stop yourself from not being hard on yourself if you do break the streak, especially if it's something out of my control?
I suppose there is an element of this where some of the things I've been sort of looking into during COVID and things, and speaking to other people as well, really. And if you follow the well-being argument, one of the things is don't be too hard on yourself. And there is, and I see the value in that, that, you know, don't keep beating yourself up every day. But one of the reasons that the, you know, breaking a rule or changing a habit is hard. Breaking a rule, there's a reason that you don't do it is because it will make you feel bad. I suppose there's part of me that thinks, come back to the carrot and stick thing. The carrot and stick thing, yeah, sticks do work. And the reason that you don't break the streak is because you are going to be hard on yourself. Now, this is all degrees of hardness. So there is an element that, look, no pain, no gain. Sort of, yeah, so I can't break the streak. Why is that? Well, that's because I know I'll be my own worst critic.
And actually, if it's a habit, taking on one of your earlier points, you won't even know you broke it anyway because it's just been a habit. So it's fine.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's the thing, if you stop a habit, once you do it, it's not the habit.
We've got to move on because I'm conscious of time. And let's think about concentration now in a little bit more detail. I think you mentioned about managing distraction earlier and environment. Can you build on that or give us simple ideas on how we can manage that environment or manage distractions when we're studying to aid concentration?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Yeah, people talk about being better at concentrating when in fact what you're doing is your concentration appears, if you like, because you have little distraction. There is an element that, you know, some people have the ability to concentrate in a loud room. So the idea is that obviously taking yourself into a place that, and this is part of the motivation part aspect as well, and that is taking yourself into a place where you immediately know, and, you know, the classic would be a library. They used to go into libraries in pre-COVID. And you go into a library because it is quiet, devoid of noise, distraction, and equally you're in an environment where everybody's doing what you're doing, so you copy them. Mm-hmm. So a library is a perfect example. And it's not that, you know, in the home you're trying to create a library, but what you are trying to do is to create a space and eliminate sounds. And that might be as simple as putting on a headset, you know, sometimes you know, the idea of playing white noise. There's all sorts of mixed views about sounds actually in learning with regard to whether it improves concentration. But what you're trying to do is to cut out the outside world, leaving you only with the objective and the focus that you've set up in the motivation session in the first place. I have four questions to do tonight.
It really is a very personal requirement there, a very personal situation you need to address yourself to work out what works for you. I mean, I could never go to a library. I just spent my time watching people work and get more and more concerned about the lack of work I was doing. And then I get concerned about the hour it took me to get in, the hour it took me to get back, that I just went. But that didn't work particularly for me. I know it would work for others. I've got a wonderful question here. And if you could answer this, it'll be wonderful for not just for our students, but for the global population. And it's the distraction of a phone is easy to manage. While we are all at home so much, any suggestions how I put my kids on silent while I study for a couple of hours?
Yeah, and look, there's some lovely logical answers to this, aren't there? Sort of, you know, ask them politely and see how far that gets you. I suppose there is another one that you might want to think about. Distract them. I.e. give them something to do that will keep them occupied. And if it's a treat, you know, like, Daya, you get this done and you can have 1 hour, but only 1 hour or an hour and a half doing this, and they see it as actually something that's a gift to them, then effectively, and then you sort of sneak out in the background and sort of go, ha ha, they think I'm doing them a favor when actually they're doing me one.
Actually, we could combine the two. We could, you can play a game on my phone.
Yeah.
And then one, I haven't got my phone and I haven't got the kids distracting me.
Exactly.
Or one of them at least. How important is confidence to exam success?
If motivation gets you started and concentration improves the effectiveness, confidence is the fuel. It's the fuel in the engine that keeps you going. And it's worse if you are negative about, if you're not confident. So let's just clarify confidence a little bit. This isn't confidence that you'll pass. This is confidence in that what you're doing is going to work and that you're doing the right things and that you have the ability to do them. So there's an element of human confidence, i.e. ability, confidence in yourself. The confidence in yourself, and you'll see this crops up in all three of these, but particularly in confidence, is this idea of self-talk. So listen to what you're saying. And if you are hearing things about, you got this wrong last time, you'll get it wrong again, then the first step is to recognize that they are you talking. Secondly, generally, you can influence them. There's not a special little person. And then ask yourself whether they're valuable and helpful. And if you find it's slowing your work down because your concentration is being broken as your mind drifts around, well, should I be doing this? Or should I be reading the book? Or should I be booking on a course? Or should I be doing something else? If it's taking you away from the activity that you've planned to do this, you know it's the right thing, it's in the planner, then that will break your confidence and therefore break your concentration. So that's how important it is. It's the fuel that keeps you working through.
One last question related to confidence. If there was one piece of advice you could give to students who wish to have more confidence or be able to build their confidence, is there one big thing you could suggest?
I'd go with the inner dialogue. And I'd add to that, which I talked about in the presentation, which is about your beliefs. And they're too simple. There's a simple logic. It says, I only have beliefs that are helpful. All right. So I believe that I can pass the exam. It's helpful. It's just how, you know, well, you know, that's if I believe I'm past it, all I've got to do is figure out the route towards it. And that is, beliefs are confident. You know, if you look at potentially confident people, they kind of look confident.
Yeah.
But there was a lovely quote in the presentation itself about that people talk themselves into confidence, and confidence comes and goes. So you, once again, the idea of having a strong set of beliefs, and here I'm talking about things that you believe to be true. I believe that ACCA are good at marking and fair. I believe that if I work hard, I will pass. But these are just good, solid processes that will build your confidence.
Stuart, that's great. And I would recommend all of our students to reach out and access the webinar, which you can do through the Student Accountant app. And Stuart goes into a lot more detail into these areas. Finally, we always include a last question just to get a little bit more information about you, Stuart. So if you could have dinner with just one person, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I think, do you know what? I'm quite a fan of Jamie Oliver, you know, really. And the reason that I like him is because I think he's motivated. I think he's positive. I'm not saying he gets it right. And I think there's more to him than just, you know, a few recipes. But we could also have a pretty good conversation, couldn't we, and about what we're about to eat. I like food, and I know you like food, so we both like a bit of food. Yeah. So I'd invite you as well.
Thank you for that's really good to hear. I mean, I'm not sure I'd get a word in edgeways between you two, but I'd certainly enjoy the food. Stuart, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for spending time with us today. And, you know, I think we may well end up getting you back on for another podcast later in the year, perhaps.
That would be brilliant. And thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Stuart.
You can listen to more ACCA podcasts covering exams, recruitment advice, and becoming an ACCA professional, and much, much more wherever you found this podcast.